European foreign ministers are meeting in Brussels, discussing options for additional sanctions against Russia.
They continue performing a war of attrition, bombing indiscriminately any kind of civilian infrastructure, killing innocent people.
Plus, looking toward the future, what are the implications for Eurasian security?
It has exposed some very serious weaknesses of the Russians, but also the magnitude of Russian ambitions, which are really nothing less, I think, than the restoration of the Russian Empire.
And later in the program, how one American shares his experience supporting Ukraine while temporarily back home. Today is Monday, July 18th. From the Voice of America, this is Flashpoint Ukraine. Good evening. I'm Steve Miller. European Union foreign ministers are meeting Monday in Brussels to discuss tightening the extensive package of sanctions on Russia and looking at ways to add a ban on gold exports in hopes that the measures may finally start to have a decisive impact on the war in Ukraine. European Union foreign policy chief Joseph Borrell spoke to reporters as the gathering was getting underway.
The most important is the ban on Russian gold, but to be sure that the sanctions are effective, because there is a big debate about are the sanctions effective, are the sanctions affecting us more than Russia. Some European leaders have been saying that the sanctions were an error, was a mistake. Well, I don't think it was a mistake. It is what we had to do, and we will continue doing. Some people say that, for example, that the ban on oil has increased the price of oil. Well, have a look at the graph of the prices. The prices of oil since we adopted the ban on oil has been decreasing.
The G7 group of leading industrial nations last month has already committed to a gold ban, arguing that Russia has used its gold to back up its currency to circumvent the impact of several rounds of sanctions the nations around the world have already imposed on Moscow. Borrell also highlighted the humanitarian impact that the war was having.
Russia continues blocking Ukrainian wheat. They are burning it, they are destroying it. And they continue performing a war of attrition, bombing indiscriminately any kind of civilian infrastructure, killing innocent people. This is something that's a tragedy.
The 27 ministers will also assess how they can tighten controls on exports of high technology to Russia for a possible decision later in the week. Russia's defense ministry said on Saturday its forces will step up operations in Ukraine as missiles continue to strike Ukrainian cities far from the front line. Reuters' Lucy Fielder takes it from here.
Kyiv says the latest bombardments have killed dozens of people in recent days. In this strike on an industrial plant in the central city of Dnipro, at least 3 people were killed and 15 injured. More missiles hit the northeastern Kharkiv region, killing 3 people, including a 70-year-old woman, according to the regional governor. Russia's defense ministry said in a statement that Defense Minister Sergei Shoigu had ordered military units to step up their operations to prevent strikes on eastern Ukraine and other territories controlled by Russia. It said Shoigu gave the order after listening to reports from generals at a command center. It wasn't clear from this footage provided by the ministry exactly when the meeting took place or whether they were in Ukraine at the time. Ukrainian rocket strikes using Western-supplied systems have destroyed more than 30 Russian military logistics centers in recent weeks and significantly reduced Russia's attacking potential, Ukraine said on Friday. In one of the deadliest Russian strikes of recent days, at least 23 people were killed on Thursday in a cruise missile strike on the city of Vinnytsia, according to Kyiv. Moscow, which launched what it calls its special military operation against Ukraine in February, has repeatedly denied targeting civilian areas.
Lucy Fielder of Reuters News. As Russia's military pressed its efforts to expand into Ukraine's east, Ukrainian President Volodymyr Zelensky suspended the head of the country's security service and its prosecutor general on Sunday, citing hundreds of criminal proceedings into treason and collaboration by people within their departments. Joining us from Kyiv is reporter Anna Chernikova. So, Anna, what additional details can you share about these latest developments?
These organizations, like this, you know, official offices and in particular the Security Service and Prosecution Office, there were a lot of questions to their operation and to their to people involved in their operation even before the war. But this story is kind of, you know, permanent in Ukraine. So in Ukraine, if you look at Ukrainian politics. Of course, there were questions to these people. They were not particularly, you know, announced something huge in terms of investigations or something, but there were questions. And of course, for Ukraine, this announcement that President Zelensky made yesterday, it was quite unexpected. Because, of course, no one knows exactly what's happening inside this big cabinets and what's going on. But we hear time to time that certain representatives of this, of both of these organizations have been either caught on reporting to Russian services or working with Russian services. So there were these reports. And apparently at one point, these reports, you know, made President Zelensky to go forward with such reaction. What we know for the moment, as President Zelensky stated, that the large amount of crimes against national security and the connections of representatives of the security forces with the special services of Russian Federation pose serious questions to the heads of these two bodies. President Zelensky said that he was saying not once that these should be investigated and should be eliminated as soon as possible, but apparently it was not done. According to representatives of the president's office, the inspections will be conducted based on the results of these inspections. President will decide on the final decision, because for the moment the head of prosecutor office and the head of national security, they are suspended from their duties, so they're not fired for the moment.
Anna, some of the criticism against the office of the SBU is that perhaps some of those in its offices with alleged pro-Russian ties may have contributed to the quick fall of the city of Kherson, which was also the site of a recent Ukrainian counterattack. What kind of details can you share?
I should say that when Kherson fall, and for the moment Kherson is apparently one of the biggest cities that fall, it was a very big scandal inside the country, because everyone knew, and it was officially announced, that this region was prepared, it was mined, it was, so all the bridges that were supposed, you know, to be exploded in case of invasion, they were not. So, and this was a huge, you know, huge discussion. What's happening now is that Ukrainian forces are quite successful in their counterattacks, especially using HIMARS systems that allow Ukrainian forces to attack storages of the Russian forces and basically destroy the personnel. This creates problems for Russians with logistics and all this, you know, kind of stuff. So it is very important that while this operation is ongoing, there are no people who would, you know, who would play negative role, I mean, from the Ukrainian side, on this operation. So probably this has also certain connection to what's happening. Security Service, National Security Service Office, because, of course, there were a lot of questions to that.
Anna Chernikova is reporting for us from Kyiv, Ukraine. Anna, thank you very much for your insight.
Thank you, Steve.
U.S. Secretary of State Antony Blinken is also hosting Ukrainian First Lady Olena Zelenska for a meeting in Washington on Monday. We'll have that update and more available on our website. That address, voanews.com/flashpoint. Now, last week, we also shared an interview with Elliot Cohen. He's a military historian as well as a professor at the Johns Hopkins University School of Advanced International Studies. The interview was conducted by my VOA Georgian service colleague, Annie Chikvadze. Now, we pick up that second part of the conversation as Cohen discusses potential security guarantees.
It's clear the Ukrainians want to be part of NATO, and completely understandably. You know, if Estonia, for example, or Lithuania hasn't gotten the treatment that Ukraine got, It's because they are members of NATO, and there is this ironclad commitment that we have to defending them. The American interest is a free, independent, prosperous Ukraine that can defend itself with Western aid. And so, I don't see neutrality as being an option that the Ukrainians would think about. And it's not an option that we would think about. And in a way, it's absurd. You know, after what the Ukrainians have been through, the hostility that they're going to have to Russia will last generations.
But they've been discussing these security guarantees from NATO member countries. The question arises, if Germany, France, and other countries are ready to guarantee security for Ukraine, why not let Ukraine in the NATO? Is that something you think will have? I know it's early to discuss this. Is that something that will be decided on the battlefield?
It is premature to discuss that. I don't think the Ukrainians put any stock in German or French guarantees. They might put stock in American guarantees, but probably only if American troops were stationed in Ukraine. It'll be a while before Ukraine gets into NATO. That has to be a unanimous process. But I think you can imagine a sort of a halfway house where countries like the United States, maybe Britain, Poland for sure, some other countries make commitments on their own. And so you end up with a kind of de facto NATO within NATO that guarantees Ukrainians. But I think for the Ukrainians to really believe it, it would require the permanent stationing of foreign forces on their soil, which they would certainly welcome, so that if the Russians attacked again, they would absolutely be going up against Western armed forces.
And I want to turn towards the United States and ask about Washington. Do you think there is a strategy today in Washington, on the Hill or at the White House, about how does the United States would like to see the end of this war?
I don't think we're at that point yet. And I think what you do have is a commitment to Ukraine, which is bipartisan, which is quite strong, and which will continue. But, we're in the thick of a war, and thinking about how to end it at the moment, I'm afraid, seems premature. I think at the moment, the administration seems to be committed to continuing to supply high levels of aid. The Republicans are not really fighting it. And I think to some extent, people are waiting to see what the outcome of the battlefield is.
Professor, I want to ask about how does this war change the security environment in Eurasia? For countries which are not protected by, Article 5.
So it has, this war has huge consequences. In some ways, it's the most consequential war of my lifetime, I think. Before I address, the immediate question, I would just say, it has revived NATO. It is causing the expansion of NATO and the addition of two incredibly capable members, Finland and Sweden. It's reasserted America's leadership role in NATO, which is important. It has exposed some very serious weaknesses of the Russians, but also the magnitude of Russian ambitions, which are really nothing less, I think, than the restoration of the Russian Empire, or at least the borders of the Russian Empire. It's clear that the former Soviet states on the periphery watch this with some anxiety, but also, I think, with the determination that they're not going to go along with this. And the two cases I would point out would be Azerbaijan and Kazakhstan, both of which, are understandably careful about what they say about Russia. But if you look at where they really come down in the end, they have been kind of quietly supportive of Ukraine. And I think there's a reason for that. They don't want it to be a precedent that Russia gets to reestablish imperial boundaries. And that in the long run is going to be quite important. Now, the way they'll deal with that is by, in addition to whatever their own efforts are, aligning with powers that they feel can help protect them against that, whether it's China in the case of Kazakhstan or Turkey in the case of Azerbaijan, and of course the United States in the background. So I think we'll see some very interesting security-related diplomacy in the months and possibly years ahead.
That's Elliot Cohen with the Johns Hopkins University School of Advanced International Studies, speaking to the VOA Georgian Services, Annie Chikvadze. You're listening to VOA's Flashpoint Ukraine. I'm Steve Miller. The World Health Organization reports it's expanding its life-saving mission throughout Ukraine to provide physical and mental care to a growing number of war victims deprived of treatment. Lisa Schlein has those details.
WHO has 7 hubs across Ukraine that provide for the health needs of people affected by the war. It now is establishing an 8th hub in the strategic southwestern port city of Odessa. Speaking from the city, WHO Ukraine Crisis Incident Manager Dorit Nitsan says the WHO aims to help people whose physical and mental health has been harmed or has deteriorated as a result of the Russian invasion. She says millions of people with chronic illnesses are not receiving treatment for their life-threatening conditions. For example, she says people who have not received early diagnosis and treatment for cancer are suffering from advanced tumors. Similarly, she says people who have not been able to receive treatment for hypertension, stroke, diabetes, and other physical and mental ailments have seen their conditions worsen.
People are being disabled with all kinds of ways due to the war. The noise and bombardments damages hearing. Landmines have been the cause of amputations, and of course the fear, the grief, and the uncertainty that exerts on mental health.
Nitsa notes the healthcare system throughout the country is overstretched. She says there's a dearth of healthcare workers. Many have been killed. Others have left the country. She says internally displaced people who have been forced to leave their homes are doing their best to fill the gaps. She says another problem is many people in desperate need of care cannot be reached because of the fighting.
We do not have ourselves access to all areas. Many areas are now under fire, under attack. As I said, we are suffering. If we cannot come with the experts to the hospitals, to the people, to those we need, we really cannot do the best of jobs. So what we are asking is to have humanitarian corridors to allow us to step in and to care for those in need.
Unfortunately, she notes the many requests by aid agencies for humanitarian corridors to allow help and aid to go in and out of besieged areas have not been met with a positive response. Lisa Schlein for VOA News, Geneva.
The United States has joined some 45 other countries in agreeing to coordinate investigations into alleged war crimes committed by Russia and Ukraine, with the Netherlands raising the possibility of creating a special tribunal to judge them. Lisa Bryan has more on an international meeting in The Hague, which came amid reports of another deadly Russian missile strike in Ukraine.
Dutch Foreign Minister Wopke Hoekstra said justice must be delivered against alleged Russian atrocities in Ukraine, possibly by setting up a special tribunal to judge them.
The way I understand it, we have to fill the vacuum, and the ICC here doesn't have the jurisdiction. So I can imagine that you know, we do look into coming up with such a tribunal. As the Netherlands, we will take an open look into this. It will probably not be easy. There is merit in doing that with as many friends as possible from the international community.
Ukraine has already called for such a tribunal, similar to those set up to judge atrocities committed during the Rwandan genocide or the former Yugoslavia. President Volodymyr Zelensky reiterated that demand by video link during Thursday's so-called Ukraine accountability meeting in the Netherlands. Countries attending pledged $20 million to support the UN's International Criminal Court, or ICC, and other experts probing alleged atrocities linked to the Russian-launched conflict in Ukraine. Russia has denied targeting civilians in Ukraine. The ICC doesn't have the jurisdiction to prosecute suspected perpetrators because neither Ukraine nor Russia are court members. But ICC prosecutor Karim Khan said the tribunal did have powerful tools to help deliver justice and that coordination among countries was key.
This has to go beyond Ukraine because every life matters. No people of the world are more precious than other people of the world.
Speaking on behalf of U.S. Secretary of State Antony Blinken, U.S. Human Rights Envoy Yusra Zaya said alleged Russian atrocities in Ukraine mirrored those it's committed elsewhere. Lisa Bryant for VOA News, Paris.
U.S. veteran James Vasquez made the decision to fight for Ukraine on the very first day of the war. He packed his gear, got his passport in order, and headed to Ukraine. He also started a Twitter account where he tells his followers about his experience. Anna Rice narrates this story to round us out.
James Vasquez is in a suit now, but says he's a lot more comfortable in uniform. The suit is for an official fundraiser for Ukraine. The fatigues come out when he gets back to Ukraine in August.
I'm just so used to being over there and hearing air raid sirens and, you know, being shot at and shelled at and everything. It's almost weird being back.
James made the decision to head to Ukraine to fight on the very first day of the war.
I will be fighting with our soldiers, your soldiers.
The only reason why I wasn't there on the 25th is because I didn't have an active passport. I had to get an emergency passport. That's the reason why I showed up there on March 14th.
All packed up and ready to go, leaving tonight.
Vasquez says the decision to head to Ukraine was an easy one. His grandmother, born in Latvia, told him a lot of stories about Russian soldiers.
And my whole family on my grandmother's side got slaughtered by Russians. Every single one. She's the only surviving member. She was made to work in a sweatshop, you know, sewing Russian uniforms.
Now, I don't know if you guys know what this is behind me, but that's a Russian tank.
Just days after Vasquez arrived in Ukraine, he was on the front lines in the Kyiv region. His unit liberated villages where the Russian military had left deadly traps for civilians.
That is meant to kill people.
That is your quota.
Not for us. That is meant, you know, for civilians. And that's the crazy part of it. You know, there's a string tied to that glass. When you open the cabinet, the glass breaks. The pin is already pulled from the grenade, so the grenade will just go off.
James serves mainly with Ukrainians. He's calling his comrades brothers and says there is no language barrier at all.
And a lot of them speak broken English as well. So, you know, there is some degree of, an ability to communicate with each other.
From the Kyiv region, his unit was moved to Donbas. While in Ukraine, Vasquez began raising money for Ukrainian fighters. Now he's working with the American charity foundation, Ripley's Heroes.
We're not buying ammunition, we're not buying guns, we're not doing... It's more like protective, you know, body armor, Kevlar, drones, things that we need in theater. Vehicles are a big deal.
Vasquez is back in the U.S. to sell everything he owns here and then return to Ukraine. He says Ukraine has become his second home and he would like to stay and rebuild it after the victory. For Леся Бакалець in Washington, Anna Rice, VOA News.
And that's going to do it for us today. Be sure to stay up to date with our continuing coverage, not only on Ukraine, but news and events from around the world. You can do so 24 hours a day by pointing your web browser on your phone, your tablet, your desktop computer, or any other electronic device to voanews.com. You can also follow us on your favorite social media platform. Just be sure to follow VOA News. On behalf of the entire team at Flashpoint Ukraine, thank you for listening. Until next time, I'm VOA's Steve Miller. Be well, be safe, and good night.
This is the voice of America. Washington, D.C.